This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 16th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 221. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the Big Deal feature. In a year that will feature an Olympics in Beijing and a World Cup in Qatar, we lost Andrew Jennings on January the 8th, the legendary British journalist who uncovered corruption at the IOC and FIFA. Jens Sayer Anderson and Laura Robinson are my guests, joining me to remember the life and legacy of the man who changed sports journalism. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or were you wondering how bad the pandemic would get in British Columbia? How bad did it get? It's gotten so bad that the John Horgan NDP government's medical advisor, Dr. Bonnie Henry, blew it big time. When the fifth wave, the Omicron wave, hit BC in December, contact tracing and testing collapsed. All we wanted for Christmas were PCR tests, but the Grinch took them all away. Now there are no reliable stats anymore, anywhere in the province. Hospitalizations are at record levels, and the field hospital may return to the Vancouver Convention Center. So how is Henry making her forecasts now? Well, based on analysis of Metro Vancouver sewage. That's right, Metro Vancouver sewage. That's how far we've come in this pandemic. From 2 weeks to flatten the curve to, well, number two.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. If you had to put only one name to the revolution of the international sports debate over the past 30 years, if you could choose only one person to embody the growing public awareness about the economic and political abuse of sport, of athletes, and of fans, that name and that person would be Andrew Jennings. So begins the tribute on playthegame.org to Andrew Jennings, the legendary British investigative journalist who died January 8th at the age of 78. Those words were written by Jens Sayer Anderson, the international director of Play the Game and the Danish Institute for Sports Studies. Anderson and Canadian journalist Laura Robinson join me later on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. But before we remember the life and legacy of Andrew Jennings, let's hear from the late Andrew Jennings himself. He was my guest on the March 25th, 2018 edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Here is a clip.
You know, there's one thing which would sort all these out, and I announce it now and again, and nobody takes any notice because they're not paid to take any notice. And that is, we have an England, and you have it 100 other countries. I'm sure you've got it in Canada, you've got it in America, and that's freedom of information. Gosh, what a subversive thing that is. We can't possibly. Wait a minute, what is it? It's about kicking a ball about. They're highly paid people, they perform very well, they're a joy to go and see. But it's only kicking a ball about. So why can't FIFA, with its huge resources, put up a few mil to get a small team together to read the things every day and to put them through? And, of course, overnight, that would clean it up. It just would drive corruption completely out of the window, because every story, the press agencies would have to follow. And if they didn't, well, they'd die, I think, because the better stories that come out this way. So I think if you bring this sort of pressure to bear on them, and it's not exactly unpleasant. It's just government saying, oh, by the way, you're subject to freedom of information. Okay, we won't interfere, nothing to do, but we put the mechanism there. Get on with it. And I think you'd get a most surprising and hopefully a new world of sport. All these people who've followed for years and years and just with a heavy heart watch them parading and pompously on the world stage. Actually, they have people who like football. And again, if you didn't know anything, you ask the questions. It's not very expensive compared with the sort of revenues they're expecting to make. So freedom of information now, please.
Jennings authored Lords of the Rings, Power, Money, and Drugs in the Modern Olympics, and Foul, The Secret World of FIFA, Bribes, Vote Rigging, and Ticket Scandals. He also produced and presented many documentaries for the BBC. Jennings was the inspiration for my work to chronicle the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics, and I was honored to meet him when he came to Vancouver for a speaking engagement before the Games. His work lives on the transparencyandsport.org website. Now joining me are Jens Sayer Andersen in Denmark and Laura Robinson in Ontario. Jens, first of all, I wanted to ask you, what defined Andrew Jennings?
Well, I think as we speak today, Andrew is first and foremost defined by his extraordinary results. As you say, there seems to be one set of rules for athletes and sports people and fans, and another set of rules for those who live in a parallel universe, those at the top of the sports organizations. And Andrew was absolutely unique in being the first who took on in the International Olympic Committee, the Untouchables, in the 1990s. And then after the turn of the century, he turned his love at FIFA, and that love was not returned. And his journalism was so remarkable because he was completely respectless of the glamour and the power and completely disinterested in sport. But he actually managed to create rather substantial political reform in both organizations, the International Olympic Committee, a number of federations, and FIFA. And perhaps even more importantly, he inspired a generation of journalists, government officials, sports leaders with a good heart, and a number of people from different professions that have a love for sport and wanted to see it improve. I can tell you, we have had so much responsibility on this obituary. We have had 5,000 people visiting the article itself, which is quite unusual for us. We had 1 million views on our tweet about the obituary, and so many interactions and reactions keep pouring in, not only to us, but to everyone who was interested. So it is really a big legacy that he leaves.
Laura, what do you say about what defined Andrew and where he made his most impact?
Well, actually, I reviewed his book, Lords of the Rings. I believe I reviewed it in 1992 for the Globe and Mail. And, you know, as an athlete, I always saw, you know, we were sleeping on the floor before very important international competitions. And the poobahs, the brass, the top people, they were all checked into really nice hotels. And so as an athlete, I could see the difference right away between how we were treated and how top decision makers were treated. So in 92, when I started reading Lords of the Rings, and you know, really a very important reveal there was Samaranch's relationship with the Franco regime, which was a fascist regime, right? Disappeared people. And so Andrew finding the picture of Samaranch with Franco, you know, minister of sport, that really spoke more than you know, thousands of words could, right? And he did all of that before you could search on the internet, right? Like, he was a real boots on the ground kind of person. And he really showed how important it is, you know, to meet the flight of the important person coming in for the important meeting, and, you know, have a microphone and a camera with you. And that kind of journalism was absolutely not practiced in sport before. So he what Jens said about his complete respectlessness of sport, you know, I mean, the whole idea of calling yourself, you know, excellency, as Samaranch did and everyone else continued to do as president of the IOC, like, really? You are, you know, that basically he revealed that the IOC and other international, powerful international sport organizations really are the Vatican of sport.
He was extremely focused when in the 1990s, he decided to take on the International Olympic Committee, motivated, as Laura said, by his utter contempt for fascism, and which was the political background of the then IOC president, Juan Antonio Samaranch. But when he decided that, he was completely focused. And then we discovered when he switched to FIFA, he would not talk about the IOC much anymore, because he was simply only focused on getting to FIFA. And this shows a remarkable determination, because he had, I would say, before his work on FIFA, for instance, was really recognized, he had to work for about 10 years. He started in 2001, and the first time that the public really recognized something was wrong in FIFA was in 2010, when Sunday Times, and that was not Andrew's story, but when Sunday Times revealed that there were vote buying at the top of FIFA in the boardroom. And Andrew then could reveal immediately thereafter that FIFA leaders had taken a lot of money from their sports marketing company in pure bribes. You see, that was the first 10 years without real public recognition. Some among nerds like Laura and I, people who worked more than is probably healthy with the ethics of sport, but the general public wouldn't know. And then he waited another 5 years for the FBI to bring down FIFA as a whole, you may say, and which eventually forced the demission of Sepp Blatter, the FIFA president since 1998. And so this is some of the things that I take away from this is we have these huge organizations, and it takes lots of years to create changes, and you have to have complete determination and endurance, because this was not easy for Andrew. He was never living alive with a golden stucco in his home. He lived a very modest life. He had no solid financing for years, but he just moved on and on and on.
This is the Breaker.News podcast, remembering the life and legacy of Andrew Jennings, with guests Jens Sayer Andersen in Denmark and Laura Robinson in Ontario, Canada.
His passing comes before the Olympics in China, and later in the year, in 2022, we've got a World Cup in Qatar. Many say that those events should not be in either place, should not be happening for a variety of reasons. Laura, where do you think Andrew will be missed the most?
There are a number of really good investigative journalists all over the world. We meet them every time we go to play the game, and they are definitely working and living in the spirit of Andrew Jennings, and really doing a great job. And I think that they would, like Jens Weinrich, for instance. He was doing this sort of thing, but I think it was better for him, you know, to partner sometimes on things with Andrew. So people like Jens will continue to do the great job they're doing. But in terms of, I think in terms of how the environment has being created, I think what's really important, you never really know who has actually created an environment where people will come forward. You know, of course, Andrew was part of that, but I have to say that the amount of athletes who have come forward now, you know, about sexual abuse, for instance, that Andrew was part of creating an environment, even though he didn't write directly about the sexual abuse of athletes, he created an environment that said, we need to question all of these decision makers. And of course, it turned out that a number of those decision makers were either abusing or covering up abuse too. It wasn't just game fixing and bribery, right, that they were involved in. So, you know, I do believe that that the epidemic levels of abuse of athletes is the story that we're moving forward with. Not that bribery has gone away, not that game fixing has gone away. I think mainly, though, that people understand, first of all, that it's a heinous crime, And secondly, that the ghosts of abusers and those who enabled the abusers, who we would now say that they're, it's an institutional complicity, that those stories are going to be easier to do. Not that they're ever easy, but we don't meet the roadblocks that we used to meet now, because people can't deny, you know, what someone, an athlete from a national team, and then five more, and then 10 more, and then the other athletes from another team say the same thing. But we can't deny that anymore. And he helped create the environment where the denial isn't working. So there's sometimes you don't know who all the people are who benefited from your work. But I think in terms of Andrew, that absolutely everyone involved in sport benefited from the fact that he pulled back the curtain on the Wizard.
Finally, what do you remember most about Andrew Jennings, both personally and professionally? Are there any moments that stick out in your mind?
How much time do we have? I would say, since we have a rather brief format here, Andrew was characterized by being very, very different from most other people. Most of us are brought up to speak nicely, behave well, dress well, and have a kind of very conventional politeness. Andrew was in no way polite, and he would actively use his rudeness on stage by calling his opponents crooks, scum, right-arm waving fascists, what have you. A very populist, very extrovert, very flamboyant, street smart attitude. And I will not recommend any young journalists just to go there if they really don't have it very deep inside of themselves, because then it will just become manners. But the other side of Andrew was that he built networks. And you cannot build networks if you're ruthless, if you're rude to people, if you are shameless. You can only build networks by building trust. And Andrew had networks among colleagues, among sports leaders, among officials all over the world. And he systematically built this network because offstage, he was extremely kind and caring and listening, and especially very kind towards young people. And if I may add something to what Laura said, it is true that in many ways, I mean, he laid the foundation for the kind of sports debate we have. Others have contributed, but the fact that issues that were taboo just 12 years ago, like sexual abuse, like match fixing, like corruption organizations, they were non-issues. But in the last decade, this is complete. Shifted this. That's very good. But there is also a trap here. And that is that we become so complacent by discussing issues, by saying, are we going to boycott Qatar or not Qatar? Are we going to boycott China? Oh, human rights are terrible, etc. We can be very, very happy with ourselves, always mm-hmm. raising these issues. But it's also very an easy piece of work to be a pundit, to comment on what we have from facts. What is decisive is, like Andrew always said to the young people, don't trust innuendo. Don't build your stories on anonymous sources. You may use them sometimes. You need sources that are secret, but build your story on the documents. Get the bloody documents. This was always his motto. And by getting the bloody documents, he could get the substance, present us the substance on which we could build all our discussions. I think that's very important. We don't forget that we need these hard-headed journalists. And I could also mention Laura as one who understands this and who gets the bloody documents and get the bloody truth. We simply cannot forget this. And most of the journalists I know that get the blood documents, they live under precarious conditions. They work under terrible conditions. They don't get support. They are suffering financially. They have no institutional backing. And that is something we must bear in mind, because otherwise we will have very few new androgenics.
Yes, Jens, I so agree with that. Get the bloody documents. You know, I just had a conversation with our Freedom of Information officer in Ontario, you know, 2 days ago. And it's not about sport, but it is about local government and their secret meetings. And, you know, they're very, you know, they happen to be about the nuclear sector, right? So I was able to bring the ability to research from sport, you know, into, well, why are we actually having all these secret meetings about a nuclear institute? If it's such a great idea, why don't we all have that meeting together, right? And so freedom of information requests are absolutely essential to your work. But I also think that we need to know how to go through archives. And that's a really important part, because there's a lot of documents in archives, as you probably know. I mean, for the last 10 years, I've worked on a case on alleged abuse of Indigenous children by a very powerful person in sport. And there are tens of thousands of documents within the National Archives about residential and day schools of Indigenous people. And it's just been because, not necessarily me, but other researchers who care deeply about these issues have forced the federal government to reveal these archives. Now, when I said earlier that the IOC was the Vatican of sport, you know, it's so interesting, the parallels, right? Because Indigenous people in Canada want the Vatican to disclose all the archives that they have about the Catholic Church here and residential school. And so you see that these institutions build themselves, Jens used the phrase, you know, in parallel worlds. Well, that's exactly how powerful organizations operate, whether they're in sport or whether they're in religion. And I think they're actually interchangeable, and they're always about blind faith in patriarchy. I mean, that is really what it's about, right? It's about having this blind faith in the father figure. So when Andrew Jennings came along, and he really was a traitor to them, because he should have just shut up and joined the lineup at the banquet table and, you know, got his IOC and FIFA accreditation and gone to the games and enjoyed himself. So by being a traitor to, you know, to the establishment, the patriarchal establishment, I mean, they absolutely hated him. And for all his irreverence and all the other things that he exhibited at public events. I mean, the rest of us look like little shrinking violets compared to him.
Well, thanks again to Laura Robinson joining us from Ontario, and to Jens Sager Andersen joining us from Denmark on this special edition of the Breaker.News podcast, remembering the life and the legacy of investigative journalist Andrew Jennings, who passed away on January the 8th. Look forward to the work that you're doing in the future, too.
Thank you.
Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Hong Kong Free Press, University of Hong Kong replaces Tiananmen statue with seating area. Following its demand last October that the Pillar of Shame monument be removed, HKU cited safety reasons and legal risks under the city's colonial era crimes ordinance after tearing down the statue itself while students were on break. The site where the statue was erected has been surrounded by yellow barricades since the statue's removal. Photos obtained by the Hong Kong Free Press showed that there were round benches and tables placed in the area, but barricades were yet to be removed. Chinese soldiers killed thousands of student protesters June 4th, 1989, in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. In Taiwan news, Taiwan thanks Germany, France for moral support of Lithuania amid Chinese coercion. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs said it is grateful for German and French support for Lithuania's expanded relations with Taiwan and called on global democracies to stand with the Baltic nation. In Mainichi news, new daily COVID-19 cases in Tokyo expected to exceed 10,000 at peak. Six experts predict the peak daily infection figure would exceed 10,000, with some projecting that number would reach 10,000 in the second half of January. The number of new daily cases in Tokyo rose to 3,100 on January 13th, exceeding 3,000 for the first time in about 4 months. The number has jumped 39-fold in just over 12 days, from 79 on January 1st.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In King 5, Seattle, investigation launched into company operating COVID-19 testing in Washington. The Washington State Department of Health said it's aware of at least 10 testing sites operated by the Center for COVID Control. The DOH said the sites aren't licensed by the state. The sites can be found in several Washington counties, including Snohomish, King, Kitsap, Pierce, and Yakima counties, and claim to offer free, no-appointment-necessary COVID-19 tests. The Attorney General said it's received two consumer complaints regarding the Center for COVID Control's testing sites in University Place. A patient who went for a test in December said the employee had no gloves, no visor, and no mask. In Czech news, we're not being recognized. Snenemo First Nation chief insulted over name of new BC Ferries vessel. Island Gwawis, meaning Raven of the Sea, was announced as the name of a ship that will provide added service to the Nanaimo-Gabriela Island route. The name was selected with input and support from the Namjus First Nation, said BC Ferries in a press release. Namjus First Nation is located more than 250 kilometers north of Nanaimo, which lies in the territory of the Snenemo First Nation. Chief Mike Wise said that BC Ferries has snubbed his people. In the Oregonian, Portland Pickles end mascot takeover after posting disturbing image on Twitter. The Portland Pickles Baseball Club canceled a Twitter takeover with their mascot, Dylan, after the Cotton Pickle posted a selfie that intended to be him giving fans a thumbs up. It was interpreted as him showing fans another part of his pickled anatomy. In an extremely unfortunate photo crop, the photo shared on the team's account appears to be the mascot's penis. Pardon me. A pickle mascot with a penis.
The biggest sports superstar in Cascadia, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, is coming to Vancouver on April 26th. Get in the huddle at the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association annual banquet. For information and tickets, go to icba.ca or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the men and women at vaccination clinics around British Columbia. Whether it's the Vancouver Convention Center or your neighborhood pharmacy, thank you for your care and thank you for the jab.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 16th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on January 16th in 1909, explorer Ernest Shackleton found the magnetic South Pole? Now you know.
Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's PATREON.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.